Welcome in, everybody. It is On the Clock, a production of Phillies 24/7, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Happy September 1st, the first of a new month, one which I guess I don't want to come. September means, obviously, Eagles football. To me, it means college football. September means the end of the month of August as well, in case you didn't realize that. A month of August for the Phillies that was unlike any I can remember. Probably the most fun month of take away the postseason last year, take away all the postseason runs they've gone on. Maybe the most fun month of regular season baseball I've seen since, what, the comeback in 2007? It's been that long since we had a month like that. Man, what a week to cap it off. The Phils go 5-1. A tough taste in the mouth after Kimbrel blows the save on Wednesday. Harper hits his 300th. You know, Turner had a go-ahead home run as well. I was there, and I'm recording this Thursday afternoon, so I'm almost 24 hours separated from that, and it took me not nearly as long as I thought to get over that loss. The loss sucked. The fact Kimbrel comes in, Garrett Stubbs can't block a curveball, the Angels put up 3 runs and the Phils lose it. I'm over that. I'm focusing on the magic that has taken place at Citizens Bank Park. It's taken place on the road. An incredible stretch of baseball for the Phillies. So we have a lot to get to today. There is an issue with the team that we'll touch on in the next segment. I want to look at the playoffs as well, what my rotation would look like if they began today. It's an interesting conundrum for Rob Thomson. 1-2 is clear, but we'll get into all that. And then waiver wire mania. I forgot waivers existed in baseball. I guess a Verlander situation should have reminded me of that. But I forgot they existed. Waiver mania, the Phils actually get beat by half of Angels players that literally are on waivers currently. We'll get into all that coming up as well. We have to start with the week, and this is going to be a month snapshot. Because everything I say for the last week directly applies to the month of August for the Phillies. Bookended by rousing standing ovations and curtain calls and moments that, at least here working for WIP and working in radio, that don't seem real. I used to work out in Wisconsin, and it was very rare that things that happened in Philadelphia, say, which I still followed closely, would make their way onto those airwaves. Yet, starting at the beginning of the month with the Trey Turner standing ovation, and subsequent, I mean, unbelievable 3-4 weeks of production, which we'll get to, starting with that, going through a lot of winning, a lot of, oh, they're down 2-0, whatever, they'll come back. And adding in, obviously, a lot of power, setting the franchise record, 59 home runs in the month. I saw our own Tucker Bagley say that the distance of those 59 home runs, I believe, goes from Citizens Bank Park down to the boathouses on the Schuylkill River, which is not, as someone who has both walked from Center City to the ballpark at times and also happens to run along the river past the boathouses every day, can tell you it's not a close distance. That's a long way. 59 home runs. And the end of the month, the combination of Bryce Harper going deep, shouting out Chuck and Mount Airy, completely unprompted. He was asked about what it felt like to have his power back. He was not asked about what caused him to go deep and tie the game in the first inning. I think it was the first. Shouts out Chuck and Mount Airy, completely unprompted. And then comes back the next day, and in an amazing fashion, he gets his 300th in front of the home crowd. And the 300th also happened to be a very significant moment in the game. It was to take the lead in the eighth inning, a lead that was squandered, but still a huge ovation, a curtain call, an amazing moment, and talks about it after the game, the pandering stuff. He says it's real, but just the bond between the city and this team continues to grow. And winning helps, but it's also how they're winning. And that's, I can't help but step back from this week and think that this is the team, the one we've saw in the month of August, but especially this week against a dead Cardinals team and a dead Angels team. This is the team that John Middleton paid for, and the team that Dave Dombrowski has helped put together. When you think about, okay, they go throughout June, and the pitching's awesome, and they're winning. Great, but Harper had just come back. His power wasn't back. Trey Turner was playing terrible baseball. There were so many things within it that weren't working. I can finally say in August, and I would have liked this to be the case all season. Luckily, we're getting it as opposed to not. This is the team that he paid for. This is the power that you expect from Bryce Harper in the middle of the lineup. Every time he comes up, you think he's doing damage and going deep. Trey Turner has played the best month of baseball he might maybe has ever played, if we're being honest. And he's got his year-long numbers up to a respectable point, which a month ago would have, if you told me that, I would have said you're absolutely crazy. They outscored opponents 48-23. Now, the 23 was aided, obviously, by the 9 runs given up on Sunday. But still, the story to me is relentless offense, top to bottom. You can go through the whole lineup, and whether it's Schwarber, Castellanos who's contributing, Brandon Marsh, and then down, you know, towards the bottom with Rojas, and even Garrett Stubbs, who finds a way to contribute as well. It's relentless offense from top to bottom, and it's pitching that does the job. They're not the Brewers. They're not going to have 4 or 5 starters that will all go deep and all be incredible, and they win games 3-2. No, when this team is winning, it's 7-3, it's 7-4, and we saw it classically against the Angels. They're down 4-2 in the 6th inning. What happened? Oh, Alec Boehm comes up, 3-run homer. Next thing you know, they win 12-7. That's how this team was built, and that's how they're supposed to win. Last playoffs, that's how they won. And then it took them a while to get back to that point. They obviously missed the power of Hoskins, but they need everyone in the lineup to be clicking in order for it to work this way, and they finally are, which is what encourages me going forward. It's also, like, yeah, Harper obviously was going to return to being Bryce Harper. We just didn't know when. We didn't know if it was going to be a full year. We didn't know if it was going to be the next week. But to see it actually happen, it's a case of, okay, Trey Turner as well. He was going to return to the back of his baseball card at some point. He wasn't going to be Freddy Galvis for 11 years in this city. Now he is actually doing it, and the entire team is doing it together. So that's my big takeaway from an awesome, awesome week of Phillies baseball. It's how the team was put together, and I'll return back to some of the Aaron Nola discussions we have had on this show. When Aaron Nola goes 6 or 7 innings and gives up 3 runs, with this team and how it is built, they should still win these games. And Aaron Nola has clearly given them a lot of value. Well, he's been tremendous over the last 3 weeks, but he's given them a lot of value in the innings he pitches because the bullpen, as you could see, is wearing down. It's a concern. Yet you know, okay, if Aaron Nola gives you 6-7 and keeps you in the game, the offense is always good enough or should be good enough to win games from there. Again, this is not a team built with a dead offense, one that just scraps together 2 or 3 runs, relying on a starting pitching staff to carry them and needing Zach Wheeler to go 8 shutout every time. No, this offense, I mean, you look in the past week, it's an outlier. They scored 8 runs per game, and they had a couple huge explosions where they won big, but they also were in some battles where Chris Sanchez didn't have it on Wednesday, and they come back, what, 3 times? Trey Turner with a moment there, to be only obviously topped by Harper later in the game. But it's the tale of this team right now, and it's the tale of how they're supposed to win, and it's awesome to see them do it. I don't care if they do it against bad teams. You're going to have to do it. And we talked about August, all the home games, how great of an opportunity it was for the team to play well, to get healthy, to get in a groove. They're not playing the best competition, and to firmly put themselves up there in the wild card race. I mean, right now they lead it. They're up, what, 3.5 games on the Cubs. I'm confident that they will finish the season in that position, which means they host the first series at Citizens Bank Park. We know what home field advantage means to this team and how well they play behind these fans. All things are good. All things are good. And really, when the team is hitting, you could look at some of the issues, and suddenly they don't feel as pressing as they used to. I know, the bullpen, which, again, we'll get to, Craig Kimbrell, there is concern there, but I think there are fixes. It's not something that I think is derailing the season. But suddenly, look, Trey Turner is hitting great out of the 2 spot. Now people don't care about Kyle Schwarber's average anymore. Now Kyle Schwarber in left field, the margins aren't as thin as you need Kyle Schwarber to make great plays to sustain a 4-3 or a 4-2 victory. Now, when Turner and Schwarber as well, who's been great, and Harper and the entire lineup's hitting, all of those things that drove us crazy, and many thought were the reason that the team was losing, which Schwarber at leadoff never was, but all those things, they don't really matter anymore. You could see how the margins have loosened on this team. There's so many more ways to win games, and the flaws and deficiencies on the team do not feel nearly as significant, say, when they get into the playoffs. So that's where we're at. I mean, an awesome week, an awesome time to be down at the ballpark. It seems like we are now expecting these great comebacks and miracle wins to happen, that's only the case when the team is playing as well as it is right now, and when you have a guy like Bryce Harper there hitting third. I couldn't help on Wednesday, for instance, news that, first of all, Christian Pache coming back, they're going to keep Rojas up with the team. I could not help but think Castellanos was the designated hitter. Schwarber was in left, so it wasn't the ideal defensive alignment. And Harper looked good at first, which is great. I could not help watching that game from thinking about how well everything fits together when Harper is at first. JT is obviously behind the plate. Stott, Turner, and Bohm in the infield. Castellanos, who's been really fine out there in right. And then Rojas in center and Marsh in left. And maybe Pache in left if they want to platoon Marsh, even though he's been tearing the cover off the ball. I couldn't help but think, like, this is always a team, or it has been for years, that absolutely stinks defensively. And we just have to accept that as fact. Which, when you're watching, and you watch Zach Wheeler say pitch, and give up runs because the defense cannot help him, yeah, you feel bad for the guy, and it sucks to watch. Good defense is one of the greatest things to know your team has. When you have a guy out there on the mound, and when you're watching him pitch, and when you're watching the team play, I think those puzzle pieces, again, with John Middleton and Dombrowski, when they envisioned what this team would look like, I think going forward for the next couple weeks, and they get into the playoffs, that vision is coming together, and I think it works really well. We all talked about, you know, left field improvements. Can they get a bat in the lineup? They clearly didn't need a bat. As we had said, they needed their bats to actually start hitting, which now that they are, you could see the lineup is deep. The lineup is really lethal from top to bottom. And they're a scary team. If I'm the Braves, if I'm the Dodgers, if there's one team I don't want to play, it's the Phillies. They're built so well for a short series with a pitching staff we'll get to later, and the offensive explosion, and then playing at home. So, yeah, the Braves are incredible. They've been peaking all season. The Dodgers, obviously, are always great. If I were either of those teams, there is no team I want to face less than the Phillies right now, which is very exciting. And it's great to know 100% confirm that a Red October is happening, that there is momentum going into the postseason. It's great to know that that's happening because it's always a question. There's always the September collapse you feel like is happening with this team. I'm confident in saying that that will not happen. And if it does, you can return to this show and blame me. Whatever. All right. Before we move on, I do want to get to a pressing issue with the team that reared its ugly head on Wednesday. And I want to get to my playoff rotation. Just a couple notes from the week and from the month that when they're set in this form, we all know Trey Turner's playing great, and we know Harper's hitting, and the power's back. When it's said in this form, I think it means a little more. Trey Turner, the ovation on August 4th, that was a Friday. Since August 5th, 23 games he has played in. He has 100 plate appearances, which is approximately, what, a fifth of a season total? Maybe a fourth of a season, depending on injury or how often he plays. He is hitting .370. With a .410 on base. His OPS, or slugging, excuse me, is .783. He has 9 doubles, 9 home runs, 2 stolen bases. His strikeout rate has plummeted. He is playing great defense again, which is something that clearly was lost when he was in his slump. There's something, well, he makes it look easy. He makes it look cool. But when he's slumping, you could see it. Okay, that play that normally Trey Turner makes look sick, yeah, he's not making that play anymore. And now he's back to doing that. And he had freaking .370 this month. His season-long average is up all the way from where it was. And again, it was bleak. He's hitting up to .260 right now. He has 19 homers. His OPS is in the mid-700s. He has 4 homers in his last 3 games in that Angels series. He is unbelievable right now. And, okay, did he need to turn it around? it wasn't going to be the fans cheering for him that actually fixed the season. It was on him, and he did it. But you cannot sit back and say that that did not help. And that was not a significant turning point, both in the team season and then obviously in Trey Turner's, hopefully, career here in Philadelphia. And then how about Bryce Harper? This is just the last week from the Cardinals series through the Angels series. He has 22 at-bats, 10 hits in those at-bats, 2 doubles, 3 home runs, 8 RBI. That's a .455 average, a .556 on base, and a .1601 OPS. That is, well, it's Barry Bonds numbers, but that's Harper postseason numbers from last season, and that is a power surge. He had a triple in there, too. One of those was an inside the parker. They're going to all sides of the field. That is the power surge that we needed from him. And when you hear the numbers said, it's really ridiculous when you think about how hot he is and how hot the team is offensively in general. Just a top to bottom, a great week from all the stars. Kyle Schwarber, he had .261. You want to talk about Trey Turner type improvement. That's Kyle Schwarber this week. He had 3 home runs. Brandon Marsh has been incredible. He had .462 this week. 4 walks as well on Wednesday against the Angels. And then the 2 pitchers. How could I go 16 minutes in this show and not mention the work done by the 2 aces on the Phillies? Now, it depends how you define ace. I would put a uppercase A next to Zach Wheeler. I would put a lowercase a next to Aaron Nola. However, they are the team's 2 aces. They combined this week, 14 innings pitched. And by the way, I don't care about the offenses they faced, okay? The Cardinals are actually a top 10 offense. Well, their team stinks. They have talent. And Aaron Nola absolutely destroyed. Aaron Nola was great on Sunday. 14 innings pitched combined between the two. 1 run that Zach Wheeler gave up, 1 run, 4 total hits, 19 strikeouts. Performances like that, I don't give a damn what the third starter's doing. Performances like that from the top 2 are all this team needs in the playoffs. Seriously. Because again, they won games with Noah Syndergaard pitching last year. Bailey Falter pitched playoff games. Gave up 4 runs in the first inning to San Diego. Phil still won that game. I don't care what the third and fourth starter do. I need my top 2 to deal. And if they're doing this, if Aaron Nola's really turning it around, that's the biggest piece of news. Put that with Trey Turner. That changes the outlook for this team completely going forward, going into the playoffs. All right, it's On the Clock. Ben Kenny, Sports Radio WIP, Phillies 24-7. We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the pressing issue on the team, the bullpen. And then I have some notes on Aaron Nola's turnaround, whether it's real or whether this is just a blip, a positive blip on a negative radar. And then what's my wild card rotation? What am I doing with the pitching staff as we get into the postseason? That is all next. It's On the Clock. All right, welcome back. On the Clock, Ben Kenny with you, Phillies 24-7. Subscribe if you're listening on podcast. Subscribe. We have shows coming out all week. And this also for Sports Radio WIP, which, if you've been living under a rock, there's been a lot to go on with this station and this baseball team in the last month. If you've been living under a rock, search Bryce Harper News. Look at all the results. I guess the news now is the 300th homer. So that might not be the case anymore. But search Bryce Harper News. I know there are some investigations into when the Turner ovation thing started. I don't know. Just make those decisions for yourself. But it's been a crazy month here. And it's obviously, again, been a crazy month of Phillies baseball. There is a concern. I wanted to wait until deep in the podcast to bring it out. I was leaving the game yesterday. I went with my dad. And there's something to be said about baseball's nature of, okay, you know the story. Let's say Aaron Nola goes 8 shutout innings. The Phillies are up 2-0. And Craig Kimbrell comes in and gives up 5 runs. And the Phillies lose. Now, that didn't exactly happen. But I can tell you the writers in the building, and as someone who has been to many a game, not Phillies games, but covered games, and you're writing your story, and you have the story. And then the 9th inning happens, and suddenly the story is different. That's baseball. Because you have to get 27 outs. There's no clock that's winding down. So, I was ecstatic as the game was going on and Harper gives the Phillies the lead. And it shouldn't take away from the general feeling we have around the team. Again, that should be a very positive one. And we should remember the Harper home run as yeah, they lost the game, but as a great moment in his career and in the season. It did make me think back to, he goes deep in game 5 of the NLCS. What if Ranger Suarez had come in and done the same thing that Kimbrel did? What if the Padres won that game and the Harper home run is just forgotten about? Luckily, that was not a do-or-die game on Wednesday, and they lost. But I'm leaving the park, and it took me about an hour to look back at that contest and say, you know what, that was great. That was an awesome scene. What happened in the game before the ninth inning was great. And it took me a bit to get over what happened in the ninth, which Craig Kimbrel comes in, Mike Moustakas, who's somehow still in baseball. If you had told me he retired 5 years ago, I would have believed you. He's up. Kimbrel spikes a curveball 0-2. Garrett Stubbs can't block it. Moustakas goes to first. That leads to like a bleeding single through the right side, a sac fly to tie it. At that point, I'm fine. I think the Phillies are still winning. And then, I forget who it was. Grichik, Drury, someone comes up and it's a two-run homer. One of the many righties, half of which are now on waivers and probably on another team by the time you're listening to this. But the Phillies lose. And the loss sucked. The loss continues a trend for Craig Kimbrel of being shaky. And it's a legitimate concern because he's been shaky as seasons have gone on throughout his career. And we're seeing the same. He had a month or 2 months of dominant pitching. At the beginning of the season, he wasn't very good. Now, he's not very good. I can't trust him as my closer. Seriously, get into the playoffs. All the other options that are out there. The problem is, I don't know who I can actually trust to do it. Sir Anthony Dominguez, who was in the game on Wednesday, didn't look great. He's been really up and down. He has not found his dominant stuff. Alvarado's been injured, working his way back. But I don't want Alvarado as my closer. I need him as my high leverage, get out of a jam, sixth inning, seventh inning guy. Greg Soto will blow someone away on three pitches and then walk the bases loaded. I can't trust him. I don't know who I could trust to be my closer. The answer might be Ranger Suarez, kind of what they did last year and with, you know, Eflin. The hope is that Sir Anthony can do it, because if he could do it, he's my guy. I'll put him out there for the ninth inning. I just don't have that level of trust in his stuff right now. He hasn't been sharp, but if there's any concern on this team, it's not the defense. It's obviously not Schwarber. It is not Aaron Nola, which we'll talk about in a minute. It's the bullpen. It's a real issue. And when you get into the playoffs, you know those games, they're going to be close ones that have to be saved. Can guys get outs? And they're going to rely on Kimbrel. The hope is that he regains his June and July form, which I don't think I'm confident in him doing right now. He doesn't look nearly as good as he did in those months. So it's worth monitoring. I would definitely focus on Alvarado and Sir Anthony, because if they return to form, things will be okay. Now, a question that we'll get to in a bit is, should the Phillies go out on the waivers and try to add somebody? However they can bolster this bullpen, I need it, because I'm concerned. So while that's a negative, and it is, the positive, which I touched on in the last segment, but I want to expound upon here, Aaron Nola. How about that? After all we've gone through, Tom Kelly's tweeting out fake ace during every start. After everything, everybody hates the guy. He's gone. They're not re-signing him. He turns around, and in his last three starts, he has been incredible compared to what he was. He has been back to Aaron Nola. How about this? In his first 26 games this season, a 4.58 ERA, 9.2 strikeouts per nine. The home runs are alarming. We know that. An opponent average of 236. An opponent OPS of 715. Not good numbers. Yet, there are some things in there that are still okay. He's missing bats. Always has been. He's been limiting base runners, but the homers killed him. How about this? His last four games started. ERA, 2.63. Strikeouts per nine, 10.1. Opponent average, 0.198. And opponent OPS 584. It's been unhittable. And the Cardinals, while they stink, again, they're a top 10 offense in baseball. That's not as if he's going up against the Royals or the Nationals when they're terrible. No, that's a good offense that he totally shut down. He goes 7 scoreless, strikes out 9. Probably his best start of the season next to the Tampa game, that 13 strikeout gem that he threw before the All-Star break. So MLB Network was diving into this, and I want to relay some of this stuff because it's interesting. And sometimes pitchers, there's a difference in feel. There's obviously a difference in velocity. We see it with Taijuan Walker from inning one to inning three to inning five. Just guys have a different way of being on or off when they're on the mound. Aaron Nola, it is clear as day when he's on, his fastball is being dotted. His location on his fastball, whether it's coming in, whether it's low, whether it's on the outside corner, when he locates his fastball, he is one of the best pitchers in baseball. We've seen this for 5 years. We've seen it since he's come up. We've seen it his entire career. So how about this? In 2022, he threw fastballs 33% of the time. Usage was high, and we know how good he was. In his first 26 games, which I mentioned, have not been good this season, or were not good. I'm going to say that in the past tense here. We're talking about Aaron Nola. Present tense is the one with a 2-6 in his last four games. Fastball percentage was down to 28% in his first 26 games. The curveball percentage was way up, 32%. He was throwing cutters more. He was mixing all the pitches a lot more, which kind of tells you that maybe the confidence in the one pitch isn't there, or at least the confidence in the fastball isn't there. Because again, everything works off of that. And if he can't locate the fastball, everything else suffers as a result. So then Sunday, his second best start of the season, but the most recent one, and the one that has us very, very optimistic. Four-seam fastball percentage, 50.5%. Almost double what it was the first 26 games of the season. The sinker percentage is way down. He did throw the curveball. The curveball was great. He threw the changeup a bit. Less cutters. The fastball was up. And the usage was better. He used it a lot more with two strikes. He used it a lot more to get ahead and to put guys away. And he was great as a result. So there's something to be said here about Nola just feeling great and pitching great on one day. I also think there's something to say, yes, that is definitely the case. I also think that this change in approach is something that clearly is different, clearly has to do with how he's feeling, but is something that could signal a material change in how he's pitching. It could be something for the rest of the season that we point back to that start and this stretch and say, oh, we got back to the fastball. He's actually throwing his best pitch well. And he throws away, whether it's the pitching coach telling him to do it, whether it's JT behind the plate, whether it's Nola himself telling the guys that's how he wants to do it. It's working. And his season long, yeah, he's a 4-3, whatever. His whip is still low. Yeah, he's given up 29 homers. That's fine. Just like the offense. When I talk about this team now, I'm thinking about the postseason and what makes me confident, what gives me pause for this team going on a run. The bullpen gives me pause. Aaron Nola's recent performance makes me confident. Like, Zach Wheeler's been great. The 3.59, he's been better than that ERA this season. He's pitching game one. Aaron Nola, as if there was ever a question, Rob Thompson said he's the game two guy. But all throughout June, the Phillies had 15 different game two starters. Oh, put Taijuan Walker out there. He'll do it. Oh, you know, Chris Sanchez looks great. Let's have him pitch it. Oh, Michael Lorenzen threw a no-hitter. Maybe he's their game two starter, which is ridiculous. And by the way, hasn't looked the same. Remember on this show, it was a great no-hitter was awesome. Not going to take away from him or the moment, how cool it was. He has not looked the same since he threw those 130 pitches and has surpassed his career high in innings. We knew it was coming. The question is, do you want to draw a cause and effect relationship there? Do you want to just say it's happening and that also occurred? I'm just presenting the evidence here. He has not looked the same, but the Phillies had 30 different game two starters. It was always Aaron Nola. I don't give a damn if he is a 4-7. He's starting game two. He's gotten you there. He's dependable. With this offense hitting how it's hitting, again, he could give up four runs in seven innings. They should still win the game. But now it looks like that has changed. Now it looks like he is somewhat back to the pitcher he's been throughout his career, which is great news. So you go Wheeler 1 and Nola 2. Who's the number 3 in the playoffs? It's interesting because every guy I'm about to name has upside, and I can acknowledge the reasons they should be, but then I have two or three reasons why I sit back and say, oh, there's no way they could do it. Who's the number 3 right now? Ranger Suarez, who's coming back from injury, and he'll pitch Sunday against the Brewers. Interesting to see how his starts go. If he looks back to being Ranger, yeah, he could be the game 3. He was I think he was the third starter in the postseason last year, if I'm not mistaken. His ceiling is probably higher than the other guys. Like, we have seen him shut down opposing teams and win playoff games. The drawback for Ranger, for me, obviously has not been very sharp this season. He's been hurt. He hasn't been all the way there. But given what's happening in the bullpen, I kind of want him in those roles. I kind of would rather have him close out a game or come in relief if the starter gets banged up. If you have Michael Lorenzen, for instance, pitch game 3, which, talk about boom or bust. We've seen the boom. He threw a no-hitter. He did 8 scoreless against the Marlins. And we've seen the bust. He gave up a 6-1 lead against the Nationals. But if you can kind of see if the boom or bust is happening, and if it is, if it's going bad, put Ranger in, that could be a duo that works. Lorenzen, I'm out on being the Game 3 starter. He has experience in the bullpen. I mean, he's better than Jeff Hoffman. So having him there instead of Hoffman, I think, could help. And especially through this season, they need to rest the pen. But I kind of like Lorenzen to get me outs in the playoffs as compared to some of the other guys out there. So no Lorenzen. Ranger, I'm in. But I would like him go to the bullpen. The ideal setting is Taijuan Walker starts to pitch well again. If he gets back to June Taijuan Walker and all those runs he gives up early, if those don't happen anymore, if he continues to battle the way he is, but his velocity is actually in a good spot, and they've skipped starts to get him back, so we'll see. But if Taijuan Walker can start game 3, that helps this team immensely. Right now, I don't trust him more than I trust Ranger, even though he's been healthy. He has not been pitching well. Somehow he's 14-5. With, again, numbers very close to Aaron Nola's, yet he doesn't lose games. Because whenever he gives up 7 runs, the Phillies score 9. There is Chris Sanchez, too. But, listen, he's been awesome. I don't think we talk about what he has meant to this team enough. Coming in as that 5 spot after the Dylan Covey Atlanta debacle situation. He's been great, but I can't trust him to start a game in the playoffs. And I know Syndergaard did it, Falter did it. I don't need Chris Sanchez in that spot. So if it ended today, my playoff rotation would go Wheeler, Nola easily. Ranger would be 3, and Taijuan Walker would be 4. Lorenzen goes to the bullpen. Maybe Sanchez in the bullpen for a matchup. But I trust Strom more than I trust Sanchez to get a lefty out. We'll see. We'll see how they can utilize him. But Ranger's my game 3 starter, if he's right, and Walker goes game 4. Walker would go game 3 if he looks great and I can move Ranger to the pen. The beauty is we have another month of the season to see how it all shakes out and see what it's going to look like. But that's where I'm at right now. Awesome stuff. It's awesome that Aaron Nola seems to be back. It makes the rest of it, I said it last segment, we're talking about a game 3 starter. You go to a lot of other teams, they don't have a game 1 and 2 that they feel good about. So the fact that we are going over which guy can give us the best chance in game 3, that usually means game 1 and 2 went pretty well. So I feel good about that in the wild card round and then the division round. And then when you face the Dodgers and the Braves, let's be honest, you're going to have to out-hit them. And even though they have great pitching, you're going to have to out-hit whatever they throw out there because they're unbelievable. All right, it's on the clock. We'll come back. There's excitement. I have a lot of thoughts about this team. I'm neglecting to get to an MLB story that we have to talk about. Waiver mania is going on. The Angels are pathetic. I'll tell you why when we come back. It's on the clock. All right, we are back on the clock. Phillies 24/7, Sports Radio WIP. I'm Ben Kenny, at Ben Z Kenny on Twitter. College football season starting. So if you want college football tweets, you should go there to find them. But we have a baseball season still to talk about, which I am excited for the end of. It's been a crazy season. As we've documented, I talked about the biggest surprises last week on the show. It's crazy how much has gone. Like today, for instance, waiver mania, the Padres didn't claim anybody. They waved the white flag. You have teams like them and the Mets that are just completely dead after being some of the World Series favorites to start the year. It happens in other sports, but to the extent with the Mets having spent all the money they spent this year, it's just been it's been an awesome season so far. It is time on this show, though. It's time for a victory lap. The Angels, which we just saw lose 2 out of 3 to the Phillies, and the one game they won, They did so because of contributions from Hunter Renfroe, no longer on the team. Randall Grichuk, no longer on the team. Reynaldo Lopez, I guess he gave up a homer. And Matt, the two Angels pitchers to get rocked by Turner and Harper were Reynaldo Lopez and Matt Moore. They're no longer on the team. I was sitting there at the game with my dad. New pitcher comes in. He's like, oh, who's this? I go, oh, yeah, Matt Moore. He was waived yesterday. So he'll be gone in 20, 12, 15, 20 hours. The Angels are completely pathetic. I said after they bought at the deadline and not only didn't trade Ohtani, but traded some of their top prospects for Giolito, for Reynaldo Lopez, they tried to bolster their team and make a run. And since the trade deadline, not only have they been poor, they've been the worst team in baseball. They have gone on a pathetic run. And Mike Trout tried to work his way back. He couldn't. He's back on the injured list. Ohtani now has a UCL injury, which no one knows what's happening with that. He's still hitting. But whoever's signing Ohtani could get, I mean, you're talking about a hitter for a year. God forbid you get a triple crown threat, one of the best hitters in baseball, and have to forego him being also one of the best pitchers in baseball. But they make all the moves at the deadline, and now they've been the worst. So they waive Renfroe, Giolito, Lopez, Matt Moore, Grichuk, others. They did so. Think about this. It makes sense. But think about if you're an Angels fan. The reason that they just waived half their team and have waved the white flag and are punting on a dead season, but completely punting, not even attempting to win, is because when they lose Ohtani, which they will, Shohei Ohtani is not re-signing with that loser organizations. When they lose him, if they get under the tax, which they just did by waiving half their damn team and all the guys they traded, again, top prospects for at the deadline, if they do that, then they get a better compensatory pick when they lose Ohtani. They move up 60, 70 spots. They are playing a money game where if they can just jump up 60, 70 spots, maybe they'll get a prospect as good as the one they traded for Lucas Giolito or Renfroe. It's unbelievable. Think about being an Angels fan right now. And obviously you're drawn to Ohtani, who is the most amazing baseball player I've seen. You're drawn to the show that he is, but you also know no matter what happens, it's an organization that just reeks of loser from top to bottom. And I feel bad for Mike Trout. He was an idiot for signing that contract and staying there for as long as he is. And good for Ohtani to get out. Go to a real place. Go to a place where you're actually surrounded by productive players and winning. That's unbelievable. So as I was actually recording this, I saw the Cleveland Guardians picked up Matt Moore, Giolito, and Lopez. So helped their pitching out a lot, but those three guys, good for the Phillies, did not go to a direct competitor in the National League, and not really a competitor. Like, the Guardians are not making a run. But one of the fixes, or half fixes, to the Phillies' bullpen problem could have been Lopez, while he's had a tough year. But all these players are claimed. Here's the message that I mainly want to send. This period is weird, and it also is weird. Harrison Bader, by the way, of the Yankees, he was waived. Like, half of the guys that we wanted the Phillies to go out and get at the deadline were waived and were available for free. Randall Grichuk passed waivers, so no one even wanted him. And we obviously know that things look different now with the team here than they did at the deadline. But this whole waiver period, it's the same nonsense in the NBA with the buyout market when entering the final stretch of the year, oh, look, LeBron gets another great veteran that wants to get out of a bad team. Oh, Blake Griffin, how about you go there? It's hard to wrap your head around how it's possible. It is infuriating as a fan. Like, even when the Sixers add whoever during the buyout market, I hate it. It's like, trade for the guy. There's something to be said about the uniform contracts and veterans not being able to just jump to a contender midway through the year. I don't like this at all, and I don't like it not for that reason, although it's a similar kind of feeling. I don't like it for the reason of teams being able to totally punt and to show how much of a money game it is, and for the fans of those teams that maybe are on fringe playoff contention-ish to now get most of their team shipped away because the team wants to get under the tax for a better draft pick. It reeks of something non-baseball. There's something I love about the deadline, how uniform that is and the decisions that have to be made throughout that process. Now, we've seen some crazy waiver dumps. Verlander, a couple years ago, the first time he went to Houston, maybe, that being one of them. We've seen those. Yet, it's just the general sense of there being two different days to add or drop players, aside from the message to the fans. In this case, oh yeah, by September 1st, which is, what, a month after the deadline, here is another batch of players that are able to be acquired and moved. I don't like that. You got to make those moves at the deadline because different teams think they could be in it. It adds to the intrigue as to whether they can actually make runs. Different teams that are in it that don't make enough moves drop out. It's like, I don't want this day to then become just you throw a couple players on the trash heap, they get to go to a good team, and then the good team gets better, and it totally narrows the scope of the game. Now, this year's unique because the Yankees stink. The Angels have stunk. So some of the teams that waived players are totally dead and out of it, and they were acquired by the Guardians. These guys aren't all going to the Dodgers or the Astros. But just in general, I don't like the sense of this day. I don't like the spirit of it. Go back to, or make it one deadline. I know this is a more tame waiver period than they used to have, but go to one deadline. Go to one deadline. All right, it's on the clock. We're up against the end of the show, and I don't have real thoughts on this. It wasn't going to be something that I expanded upon. But if you want an interesting story, if you want to be intrigued, go to Peggy Kuczynski's Twitter. That is at Peggy Kuczynski. She covers the White Sox for ESPN Chicago. Go to her tweet about the shooting that happened at the White Sox game. I don't have much to say about it. I was just going to bring it up, but I'll let everyone go do their own research on this one. Go find her tweet. One of the interesting stories of the week. One of many. Off the field, on the field. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. But it's on the clock. I'm Ben Kenny. We will come back after this, close it out. We will look ahead to the weekend in Milwaukee for the Phillies, and then the trip to San Diego thereafter. The next week in Phillies baseball, what needs to happen for this hot streak to continue? They're going out on the road. We will touch on all that next. It's on the clock. All right, on the clock, Ben Kenny. We are back, sending you into the weekend, into the, is it Labor Day? I know this is stupid, but I always get the two holidays confused, and I shouldn't. I really shouldn't. But I know two of them exist. I know the concept. I know what they are. But I always forget which one's at the beginning, which one's at the end of the summer. But I guess that speaks for someone that doesn't work 9 to 5. And I guess I'm not working on Monday. But the whole normal schedule thing, at my old job even, I didn't get those days off. We did shows during them. So I'm not on the normal U.S. America schedule that many others are. So I'm sure they know what holiday it is. But it's going to be listen, having worked in Wisconsin and not covering the Brewers, but following them closely, talking about them every day, I do have a connection to the state. I would not call myself a Brewers fan. However, there is nothing I love more than being able to rip my former colleagues in a, you know, fun sports way. But last year when the Phillies, well, obviously the Eagles trounced the Packers, but there were other stories with that. Jordan Love looked great. But when the Phillies went into Milwaukee, and this was before Josh Hader got traded, and the season turned around when it's the ninth inning and Alec Boehm, Matt Vierling take Josh Hader deep. It's like the first home runs he gave up in a year. Phillies win because of that. There is so much joy I take from beating that team. And we get another shot at it this weekend, and the Brewers are good. Like, this is not a pushover Brewers team, and they're hot. 8-2 in their last 10. They were on a 7 or 8 game win streak, and I think just dropped 2 out of 3 in Chicago. They're 3 games up on the Cubs in the Central. And the loser of the Central, by the way, as things stand now, which is the Cubs, would be the Phillies' opponent in the first round of the playoffs. But the Brewers come into a series. Their pitching is incredible. It has been for some time. Luckily, so Brandon Woodruff just came back from the injured list. The Phillies are going to miss him. He pitched on Sunday. The Phils will get, Zach Wheeler, goes on the bump Friday against Freddy Peralta, who's been awesome this year. And if you want to get really, really frustrated and irritated at Phillies hitting, watch them try to hit Freddy Peralta. Because he'll walk guys, he'll give up some base runners, but the swings and misses are going to be out of this world. I wish I could say I think it's going to be a big Kyle Schwarber series, but I don't, unfortunately. I cannot see that being the case. Saturday, Aaron Nola against TBD, unannounced from Milwaukee. But we got Wheeler, Nola, and then Ranger, I think. Yeah, Ranger on Sunday. This could be the playoff rotation. Entering this weekend, this could be how it lines up. Wheeler versus Peralta, Nola versus TBD, and then Ranger Suarez against Wade Miley. Just a classic matchup of the most crafty lefties in baseball. Two of the most crafty lefties in baseball. That should be a great one. The Phillies and Brewers have the same record. They have taken very different routes to get there. The Phillies score, and the Brewers don't really score. Their pitching has been awesome, and they find a way to win games, so you give them credit. Craig Counsell, their manager, I love. But this should be, like, they're going on the road to Milwaukee. I would love a series win. Continue the momentum and keep building space in the wild card. My gut says they lose 2 out of 3. But we'll see. I mean, the Phillies' best pitchers are on the mound. The offense seems totally unstoppable. We'll see if they can overcome their curse of traveling to Milwaukee. Actually, it's a place that's been quite good. But there's something about a Milwaukee trip and then going to the West Coast. Feels like for the Phillies never goes well. They're away from home, at the least. But that should be a really fun series this weekend. And those games are all, I think, 8 o'clock. Well, Sunday they're at 1. 8 o'clock, 7:15. So you get some night baseball as college football starts as well. And then they go to San Diego, a place that has turned into one of my favorite visiting parks to see the Phillies go play. That for obvious reasons. Everything post the Harper broken hand. But listen, it's a two tough teams they're going up against. The Padres are on the verge of almost dead. I'm not going to call them totally dead, but they didn't claim anybody today. They're not the NLCS Padres of last year. But listen, it's a road trip, and it's a road trip against two solid teams. I would take 3-3. If you tell me 3-3 in the next week against these two, I come on, we talk about some good, we talk about some bad, I'm all in. I don't need them to go 5-1 or 6-0. Just continue the momentum. Aaron Nola, please shove on Saturday so we can continue the victory lap with him. But other than that, just an awesome time to follow the Phillies, to do what I do. Hopefully, as fans, you guys feel the same way, to do what all of you do. Both listening to this show, watching the games, caring about the team. It's been awesome. So until next week, I'm Ben Kenny. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again. See ya.